Well, Secretary Chu, welcome to Living on Earth.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
Before we talk about the 2012 budget, I want to talk to you about this year's budget. We don't have a budget. We're operating on a continuing resolution. And right now, there's a battle royale in Congress about what we're going to do about the remainder of the year. The Republicans really want to slice your budget further.
That's correct. I think this is going to be some tough decisions. Compromises have to be made. But certainly, the president in his 2012 budget is putting down a position that he thinks that particularly education and energy are really vital investments going into the future to create jobs tomorrow and the next year and into the future.
Well, those are the areas that Republican congressmen have their scalpels out. They want to cut deep into the budget for the Department of Science.
Yes, that it would be very troublesome. I think the Office of Science has over many decades proven what an incredible investment that is and continues to be. Some of the discoveries from that have led remarkably to pretty fast commercialization of products. Let me give you one example. Office of Science Research and Argonne National Laboratories develop a suite of patents, new ways to make chargeable lithium batteries, which would increase the energy density of that material by 50 to 100%. It would increase the safety of the batteries, and it would decrease manufacturing costs. It would do everything. Those patents were picked up, being licensed, and most recently GM has picked up the suite of those patents to make next-generation batteries. But already those ideas, which were... The patent was awarded in 2001, have already been incorporated into the current Chevy Volt battery.
Well, looking forward to 2012, you're asking for even more money for the Office of Science. You're asking for $8 billion for research and development for clean energy, including nearly $5.5 billion boost for science.
That's right. When the president spoke in his State of the Union address, he said, we have to out-educate, out-innovate, and outproduce the rest of the world. It's a very competitive place out there. One of the core strengths of America, literally over the last century and beyond, was that we had brilliant inventors, we had brilliant entrepreneurs, we had the building of the American technology enterprise, and contributed to a great amount of the wealth in the United States. And so this idea of continuing this innovation chain, starting from basic discoveries to inventions to ideas for things that go into the private sector, is something the president and I feel very strongly about. The way to do that is to invest more in the research and development in particular, which leads to this wellspring of ideas from the computer and internet revolutions to the biotech revolution, and now there's going to have to be a new industrial revolution.
But Mr. Obama is calling for doubling the number of energy innovation hubs from 3 to 6. Given the climate on Capitol Hill and the budget realities, can this fly?
Well, we hope so. There was a lot of hard decisions made on the overall budget, and as I said, some agencies, many agencies got cuts, significant cuts. And the budget proposed for 2012 was a budget which actually put a freeze on the overall spending. And it was pointed out that this is the first time since the Eisenhower administration where the president has proposed such an austere budget. Now, given that, there was a determination made, and I think it's the right call, that in times of austerity, the last thing you want to do is stop the things that will lead to future prosperity. It's, the old expression, it's our seed corn. In times of deep austerity, the last thing you want to do is cut your research and development budget. It's as if you have an airplane, you're designing an airplane, it looks like it's overweight, and the way to trim the weight is to take off an engine.
Well, you have big boosts for things like electric vehicles. You have, 80% increase to nearly $600 million for R&D for advanced vehicles.
That's a good example of how to compete to win the future. All around the world, countries and companies take note that there we expect great advances in battery technologies and system technologies for plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles. Those vehicles that you start with 100-mile range, but soon to graduate to 200, 300, 400-mile range on a single charge, the companies and the countries that develop that technology will have a world market. We personally think that it could be upon us within a decade for sure, but even sooner. So it's an intense race, and it's a technology race in order to see which companies and countries develop these technologies. We do not want to be importing these cars. We want to be building them in America and exporting them to the entire world.
But it's companies that will make a profit. Why don't they pay for it?
What we're proposing is to do research and development on not today's batteries that are going into the Chevy Volt. That's something that should be done by the private sector, and it's being taken up quite nicely. But we're proposing a new generation of batteries, which is very basic research and development that could help. Again, other countries are aiding their companies in getting the lead in this technology.
In terms of conventional fuels, though, subsidies through the Department of Energy for fossil fuels are getting sliced by 44%. They'll still be nearly $500 million, but that's a big chunk out of fossil fuel subsidies.
Well, the reason for that is if you look back in the history of the United States, when the United States, for example, was developing its oil production in the early part of the 20th century, there were a tremendous number of subsidies. That is somewhat of a legacy, and you have to ask yourself in 2011, do companies who are making tens of billions of dollars of profit each year really need those subsidies? Then you look at what are the new things coming on the block. Photovoltaic advances that could really dramatically lower the price. Again, it's going to be a race among countries and companies to see who can drive those prices down, make them much more efficient, cost-effective, at where the target is that they can compete for energy generation with fossil fuels without subsidy.
How does the president's budget proposal for the Department of Energy address climate change?
We see a world where it's a good probability that the price of oil, a high probability that the price of oil in the coming years will be higher. We see a world where the world will be demanding those technologies that produce energy in a clean form. Already, China is moving very rapidly, both in their home market. They intend to go to somewhere between 15% and 20% renewable energies within the next 5 years. They're developing a home market, but they're also doing this because they realize the rest of the world will want these products. And so in the Department of Energy, what we're trying to do is stimulate, make investments in research and development, and with some help in deployment, to actually have America develop, produce, manufacture, and sell those products, again, for a world market. This is why it's so key to our future prosperity.
I wanted to ask you about federal loan guarantees to nuclear power plants and the construction of new nuclear power plants. In your proposed budget for 2012, you're asking for seed money to basically start $36 billion in loan guarantees.
That's correct. We initially had authorization for $18.5 billion. That amount of loan guarantee, and I think it's important for your listeners to understand what that means is that we can guarantee a loan to a company like for two nuclear power plants, the ones we have already closed on, Vogtle, or made a commitment for the Vogtle power plants, two nuclear reactors. The out-of-pocket expense to the federal government is actually designed to be zero. So you get the loan guarantee, and if there's some risk that the loan not be repaid, the OMB makes a determination, let's say charge a few percent, whatever it is, and the company who's applied for the loan has to actually put up that money. It's sort of like a mortgage insurance. And so that doesn't come out of the taxpayer money. And so what we've asked for, in addition to the $18.5 billion, we're asking for for an additional $36 billion in loan guarantees. We feel that with those loan guarantees, one could build perhaps 9 to 12, 13 nuclear reactors, perhaps 6 to 8 nuclear projects, because sometimes you build double reactors. We want to restart the nuclear industry. We think that nuclear power in this century will be an essential part of the mix of power generation. It's clean power generation, and quite frankly, we want to restart our nuclear industry to get back in the game. The United States built the first nuclear reactor. The leadership in the production of nuclear reactors since the early years has migrated first to France, and now Japan and Korea are in the game. China, worldwide, there are now, ground has been broken on about 50 nuclear reactors, of which China is building half of them. And so China wants to step into this game as well, because there's an anticipation worldwide to have a nuclear renaissance, that you can build these reactors, which will be far safer than the earlier ones, passively safe designs. These are all good things, and it's also about energy security and clean energy.
I believe there's a line item in the president's FY 2012 budget for something I find kind of curious, modular nuclear power plants.
Yes, these are called small modular power plants. The conventional power plants that are being built today are very large, between 1,000 and 1,500 megawatts of power. That's a pretty big power plant. There are many instances where the local electricity transmission infrastructure couldn't even handle that amount of power. There's also restrictions on the amount of cooling you would have for those power plants. People have begun to think, is it possible to build smaller power plants at the scale of, let's say, 100 megawatts instead of 1,000 or 1,500 megawatts? And that can be done and built in a factory in a single location, and not only shipped around the United States, it can be shipped around the world. And so there's been a lot of interest in small modular reactors, not only in the United States, but in other countries around the world, an intense competition to who will actually generate these and produce these. And again, this is where we can regain leadership in the nuclear industry. And so the Department of Energy is very enthusiastic about trying to support the research and development and also the engineering work that can lead to licensing.
So if this makes so much sense and saves so much money, why would Republicans want to slice the Office of Science?
Well, I don't think all Republicans want to slice. I think there are many people on the other side of the aisle who appreciate that research and development is a necessary function of government. The very most basic research, the companies, the research we do cannot be all captured by a single company. And in today's, meet the Wall Street's expectations for the next quarter, I think many companies are loath to make investments where they won't be capturing all of the value of that research. And so it is a necessary part of government. And the United States has realized this for over a half a century. And quite frankly, other countries have learned from our playbook and are investing in spades in this. It's a competitive world out there, and we should continue to do this.
Dr. Stephen Chu is the Secretary of the Department of Energy. Secretary Chu, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.